It's good to be on your porch, Danbury's, and thanks for having me over. The record's been out a little bit, and we'll talk about kind of the experience of having it out there in this strange year. But I mean, to be frank, last time I checked in with y'all, which would have been Ben, and just a couple years ago, times were tough. You were talking about, you know, there was a kind of lost feeling about the duo, and your marriage was in trouble, and you were having struggles. And then I know that in the meantime you had a baby about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And so amid all that, I'm amazed this thing got made. And it has to be both, there has to be a story of that, where that came out of that and made it better in some way, shape, or form. But Dorothy, you got the microphone, so why don't you start with partly the, you know,
how we made it out of the weeds.
The weeds is maybe a good way to put it.
Yeah, well, I think actually we started writing these tunes right at the end of that period. You know, we really, yeah, you're right. I mean, we almost got divorced. We didn't play music. We just didn't play any music for maybe a year and a half. We were questioning everything about the music, each other, our relationship. And we went to a lot of marriage counseling. I mean, a lot. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. We just, like, had this great counselor who said, you know, you guys can go, you can break up. You know, you've got this awesome thing musically together. He's like, I've listened to it. He's like, you guys can break up and lose that and go your separate ways and find new people and go through, work on your same issues with these new people and have the exact same experience that you're having right now with somebody else. Or you can decide to keep what you have right here. And work on your issues together and work through it together. And I don't know, it was just like, we just kind of had this moment after, you know, like forcing ourselves to go talk to this guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ben had moved out twice. Like, we probably lived in mutual hatred of each other for at least a year.
Oh, man.
It was tough. Yeah. And we kind of just had this moment where we just decided, like, okay, well, he's right. Like, I have issues, you have issues. Everybody has issues. We all messed up in some way. And we're just going to, like, you know, we're going to work on this. And we're going to, like, you know, say what we said we were going to do when we got married and stay together and work at it.
Ben, you guys co-wrote this record. To carry me into the timing of that and how challenging that was, or if that was the exact right thing for y'all that y'all needed at the time?
Yeah, well, that was, well, to lead up to answering that question, and I will answer it in a second. So Dorothy and I, like, we decided to stay together, and then obviously the music was still like, okay, well, we're still going to play music, so the music still needs to be there. But we both had kind of moved past the kind of acoustic roots thing we were doing, like kind of the funky string band. Like, I don't know, It was something that kind of we accidentally fell into, and it was fun, but we wanted to do something slightly different, but we didn't know what quite yet. We didn't know what direction we wanted to go.
Yeah, because when I first heard you guys, it was definitely in the vein of East Nashville progressive bluegrass.
Exactly.
You're a flat picker, acoustic player, but there was always that extra groove,
right,
and little percussion touches and stuff like that. But right. I see where you're getting at.
Right, and I was always interested in bluegrass, but Dorothy was never really coming from there. And like when the band started, it was kind of the first EP we did was kind of something that was kind of my dream kind of thing. And then as the band progressed, and Dorothy was like, "Hey, I want to have a voice too," which was totally awesome because she writes amazing songs. And so then the next two records were kind of more of a blend, and then moving away from that first little album we did. So moving away from the bluegrass, and then too with bluegrass, I mean, we also just, like, there was a certain ceiling and a certain, I don't know, it was just a certain thing that we just were like, let's see what else is out there. And we think that we're bigger than this. Like, if you would have told us, like, you know, at the time, if you'd have told us 5 years ago before we'd started the band, like, oh, you guys are going to, like, be in a progressive bluegrass band, we'd been like, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. You're crazy. Because, like, you know, we both were into, like, funk and soul and rock and roll and all this other stuff. But, so, we almost get divorced, and then we stay together, and then, like, well, what are we going to do? And we don't know, because at this point, we still can't even really co-write together. That's never worked, because, like, anytime we try to co-write, it's an absolute disaster.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, and it's just like, you don't understand what I'm trying to say. Oh, you don't understand what I'm trying to say with this song. And, like, so like, you know, all the songs up to that point, we pretty much, if Dorothy sang them, she wrote them, and if I sang it, I wrote it, and we would help each other in certain ways, finish the song, or we would go to each other for advice, but for the most part, like, we wrote the songs on our own. Well, one day I get a call from a guy named Brian Brinkerhoff, who has gotten our name from this guy, Hippie Jack, who has a festival called Jammin' at Hippie Jack's. And so Brian had been at Hippie Jack's co-producing a record for Malcolm Holcomb. And he was co-producing it with Daryl Scott. And so when he was there, he showed up the weekend before they made this record, and that was when Hippie had his festival. And so he asked Hippie Jack, like, hey, here's some artists I should maybe check out. And so we were one of the artists that Hippie gave to Brian. And so Brian ended up, like, buying our most recent CD and ends up calling us and is basically like, hey, I want to make a record for you guys. Hmm. And we were like, all right, red flags everywhere. Like, you know, like, who are you and you just want to pay for us to make a record and all this. And so, you know, and so it turns out, like, he'd worked with some people that we knew or knew of, like Corby Linker. He's done a lot of some records for him and some other people. So we kind of, like, did our homework and, like, you know, it's like, okay, this guy's, like, totally legit. And he just loves music and he's kind of like a philanthropist. And
his name came up for the first time when I was researching this project. And where is he based?
So he's out of San Francisco.
Oh, my God.
Or Santa Cruz, actually. He has a house there. But he's in San Francisco part of the time, too. But
he just loves the Roots music?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, all types of... I mean, this guy's insane because he was, like, at one point a CPA for, like, a major, like, one of the top four accounting firms, but he also, like, sold merch for Pantera in the early 90s, and he was a musical director of some sort at Walt Disney for, like, 15 or 20 years. So this guy's just kind of, like...
Okay, cool. All right.
Done all kinds of crazy things, and he likes to make records for people we were told that he started out making records for people that had kind of been forgotten, that no one else, you know, were going to make records for. Like, he'd go to Memphis and find out, like, who's the 65-year-old guy that lives in an apartment who everyone that's from here knows, but who's never really had anyone, you know, had anyone make a record for him or whatever. And so he just kind of, I don't know, he just approaches people and makes records, and he has lots of series.
So how big a kind of... Once you realized that it was legit and a true opportunity, was how out of the blue opportunity to actually create again and do this was that for you? Was that like a this couldn't have come at a better time kind of a thing?
Yeah, definitely. Because he basically is like, well, I want to make a record for you, and the rules are you have to co-write every song together, and we're like, okay. And so that's how we kind of ended up doing that. And then he wanted to make a stripped-down record, and then as it we kept writing the songs, Dorothy's like, these are not duo songs. And then Brian had let it out of the bag that he was friends with Marco Giovino, who is one of our favorite drummers. So Dorothy's like, oh, Marco is going to play on this record. And so then it kind of went from there. But
yeah.
So
willed it into being.
Yeah.
Well, that's a wonderful part of this record's feel, because Marco played for Buddy Miller for many years and was part of the Robert Plant, Alison Krauss situation, as I recall, at least, and so he's got this great world percussion kind of imaginative polyrhythmic, you know, thing. And I gather he's got like he's up in Boston, right? So you went up to Boston to do this?
Yeah, we went to Marco's studio in Boston. And
he must have all kinds of drums.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Marco's buddies, so like kind of all these like old school Boston guys, he put the band together. We didn't know who any of them were, which was kind of totally different than how we'd ever made a record. And we never even really ran the songs before we recorded them. We kind of compared charts, and then we just kind of hit record and had at it two or three times, and that was it. And totally different way for us to make a record.
So, Dorothy, when did you know you were pregnant? Was that part of this?
No, I did not know I was pregnant, and I was not pregnant.
This is before baby came into the picture. You made the record.
The time is so weird now.
When did you make the record? 18?
January 18. And that's why it's taken so long to get it out, because we made it in January, and then we went on a UK tour, I think. Mm-hmm. And then when we got back from the UK tour, I was pregnant, and that was August. Yeah. And so we just kind of, we told Brian, we were like, oh no, we got to tell Brian that I'm pregnant. Cause like, we didn't know, like, you know, how you do the whole thing while you're pregnant. And I got really sick.
Oh.
So some people can just kind of be pregnant and, you know, just kind of have like a 3-month thing after the baby's born. And it's not that big of an interruption, but for me, about, I don't know, a month or 2 months in, I got really sick, like really sick, and I was really sick the whole time. So everything just kind of came to a halt. And then Ollie was born in May, and we were just kind of, then Brian, he was in California with all the fires, and he got displaced, and all his family moved in with him.
Hmm.
And so we had all these like things that were happening and on our team that just kept kind of pushing everything out. So we finally got our team together and our timeline and everything. And then COVID hit right in the middle of it. But, you know, it's been interesting. I mean, it's...
Well, you've got to, you're showing the positive mental attitude. Carry me back a bit. You both have Tennessee roots, grew up near here, and as I alluded to before, known each other since you were kids. But how do those roots, a long history near or in Nashville, this East Nashville situation where we're sitting here, this wonderful, sprawling, creative place, how's it manifest in creative work and your attitude about who you are, and you know what you want the Danbury's to represent to people. Just loosely, I'll let you take it first, and then we'll swing the mic over. But I want to hear that from both of y'all.
What a question. Well, I grew up out on a tobacco farm, out in the middle of nowhere, and both my parents were teachers. And my dad, he kind of woke up every morning before sunrise and went out and worked in the fields and then came in, took a shower, went to school, worked until around 3, came home, worked in the fields until the sun went down, went to bed. Mm-hmm. That's what he did, like, you know, my entire life. So I learned this like major work ethic from him.
Mm.
That this like southern country farm girl kind of work ethic, you know. And musically, we were out in the middle of nowhere, but we got the big stations out of Nashville. So like, I think it was the one that came, 104.5, like the classic rock. And my favorite was 96.3, which was Motown. They had the best Motown station in Nashville. So I listened to like a lot of just like top 40 stuff. And my parents were really into country music and... Well, my dad. My mom was into show tunes, so we won't talk about that. But my dad liked country music, but then he was really into like old country music, like Johnny Cash and like Merle Haggard and stuff. So we listened to a lot of that, and it's weird because like I see it, all of these influences come through like in my writing, particularly. I can't help. I grew up listening to Faith Hill and Reba McEntire, you know, 80s country. It still comes through. But then I also, over the years, have really delved into, like, New Orleans funk and, you know, classic rock and just all kinds of different things. But I always will have this, like, core of being a country girl. I mean, like, I wore boots when I was a kid so that I didn't get... cow poop all over me. You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of...
And you were singing all your life, but getting on stage and doing it with presenting, you're in the center of attention kind of thing, that was tougher for you.
Yes. I hated getting on stage. And really, it was only at church. My parents were always pressuring me to get up and sing at church, and it was a really big deal. You know, everybody will be so disappointed, Dorothy, if you don't get up. And they would make me do this about once a month. Huh. And I would just be sick for days. Because it was always like, you know, something a cappella. I would just have to get up there and stand by myself in front of everyone and sing something a cappella. And
you think they were trying to, like, teach you some kind of character to make you do this? Is this... You know,
that could have been part of it. That could have been part of it. That, because that is my dad's MO. I think that, because he kind of did that with me with a lot of things, because I had a lot of performance anxiety about a lot of things. Like, I played basketball. He made me try out for the basketball team when we moved to a bigger school. He literally picked me up and shoved me in the car and locked the door so that I couldn't get out to take me to basketball tryouts. Because then he said, as I'm crying on the way there, you'll thank me for this later. Like, you will be very upset if you don't try out for the basketball team because you love basketball and you want to play basketball and you need to do this. And so, yeah, I think maybe they were just trying to get me. They knew I could sing and they knew I loved to sing, and they may have just been trying to get me to get over my fear, which is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting up on stage over and over and over again.